I wish I could do R2 sounds.
Ooh. R2's really adorable. Not as adorable as BB-8, but...
That was your argument blowing up in a nuclear flame.
Damn.
Is it cold in the shade? See, like, my thing is, BB-8 is cool, but without R2-D2, there is no BB-8.
That's fine, but...
Disrespect the original gangster at your own peril.
But you can't just, like you're saying that there's no BB-8 without R2, but there's still BB-8.
Yes, but the point is, everything that is great about BB-8, one way or another, is tied back to R2-D2. And this, you cannot forget.
But they're separate entities.
Look, I've met a lot of BB-8s, great people.
Great people, the best people. I get along with them very well.
I like BB-8. I really do. I just... R2. It's like, do you like Darth Maul over Darth Vader? Like, no one would ever argue that.
No one would ever say
like,
that.
Like, Darth Maul is arguably kind of cooler looking.
No.
Yes.
Nuh-uh.
Yes. He's more badass.
Did you just say
he's a demon.
Did you just say that no one would ever argue that Darth Maul is cooler than Darth Vader, and then you just argued that Darth Maul is cooler looking than Darth Vader?
All right. Right, you should probably make a new recording.
That BB-8 thing is the intro.
No.
Yeah, it is.
It's not. I don't want it.
Are you sure?
Well, do what you want. Again, you have full creative license. Damn, we lost a viewer.
It's because of my controversial BB-8 opinions. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it.
Welcome back to the Garage Hockey Podcast. I'm Felix Sicard, joined by Nick and Joe Berger, my two fantastic, above league average, great underlying numbers co-hosts. Like, what more can I really say there?
Heading for the Hall of Fame?
All right. Well, anyway.
Wow. Oh, wow. All right. Wow. Way to backtrack.
All right. But
man, you go sprinting up to the line and then just tiptoe backwards.
All that being said, it's been about a week and some pocket change since we've been in the studio, and not much has happened since. I mean, you know, like, well, in the hockey world, the Cubs won the World Series. We have a new president. Outside of that, not much has happened.
Yeah. Life has been pretty plain.
Outside of things that have never happened before.
Yeah, outside of, like, statistical anomalies. Well, maybe the Cubs don't count. But outside of that, like, not much has happened.
2016 just keeps 2016. Yeah. Ing.
Yeah. But anyway, it's good to see you guys. I know you were in Disneyland last weekend. Did you meet any of your childhood favorite characters?
You know what? Something happened. I had trouble getting into the park on the second day because I got the wrong ticket scanned or whatever. It was weird. And in the meantime, while the rest of our squad was in the park and I was at the box office settling the ticket confusion.
Controversy.
My friends took a squad pick.
Oh.
With Goofy.
Oh,
and
man.
Everybody loves Goofy.
So you were the guy that didn't get a picture with Goofy.
I got no Goofy love.
Yeah.
All right, that's not weird.
We're sworn enemies now. Goofy's not loyal, is what I'm saying.
I don't know. I don't really know who I would say is my favorite Disney character.
And for me, now it's Darth Vader, but whatever.
Oh, but see, like... No,
it doesn't count.
I mean, it literally counts, but we all know it doesn't. I would say...
I just said that.
Look, my favorite Disney hero is probably... I mean, I don't know. I like Aladdin. Aladdin was cool.
Aladdin was great.
Aladdin was pretty cool.
The genie was great, though.
The genie was great.
Shout out to Robin Williams.
One time.
I'm
finding that a lot of my favorite Disney characters are coming from, like, the recent, like, Pixar movies. Like, I loved Anger in Inside Out.
Yeah.
I loved The Dog in Up.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because... Okay, let's just settle this debate really quick, and then we'll talk about hockey. Toy Story 1, 2, or 3?
I have to be real.
This is like I've almost come to blows with people over this.
All right. Well, you're gonna be real disappointed in us. I've only seen the first. Well, I've seen the first two.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm disappointed in myself. I have not seen the sequels.
So you've only seen the first one.
Yes. I had an opportunity to see the third one, and then something was going on.
That doesn't matter. Okay.
Okay.
So
I'm just going to leave now.
Okay. This conversation just died. But it's okay, because luckily we're the Garage Hockey Podcast, not the Garage Toy Story Podcast, so we can continue. We can march on.
Andy's coming.
All right. That was actually pretty good. Okay. So hockey, actually... Interestingly enough, there's a lot of unexpected things happening in the National Hockey League. One of them being the New York Rangers, a team that I, for one, on this podcast, basically said we're dead in the water and we're going anywhere this season. Turns out, I don't know at all what I'm talking about.
They're really good.
They're really good. I think they lead the NHL in goals scored with 58.
Yeah,
something like that.
58, and it's kind of not that close.
58 goals scored in what, 15 games played?
Yeah, and only 34 against.
To the listeners at home, you do the math. 58 games in, or 58 goals in 15 games. That's pretty good. That's a pretty good average.
That's really good.
Yeah. Let's quickly get into the Rangers. I think that what's interesting about this team is that they've been derided for so long for their lackluster defensive play, their over-reliance on Henrik Lundqvist. And here we are talking about an offensive juggernaut. What happened?
And who knew that Jimmy Vesey was going to make such an impact right off the bat?
Yeah. Partly Vesey.
Yeah. He was plugged into a system. So the pieces around, everything is very cohesive in New York now.
He arrived at a very opportune time. But we're going to get more into that. Nick, what are your thoughts? What happened?
I mean, you look at their lineup, and their fourth line is... Buchnevich, Peary, and Fast, according to our sources.
Oh, that's nice.
That's not your average fourth line. And I know fourth lines are getting better, thankfully, but that's not a fourth line on every team.
I know, when you're talking about cup runs, that kind of a fourth line is the depth you're looking for.
Well, that's the thing, is that I don't know at all their decision-making process, but what I do know is that they've made a very clear effort to inject skill and speed into their lineup in every line. And is it an accident that happened the year after they got just utterly destroyed by the Pittsburgh Penguins in the first round, skated circles around, and then the Penguins go on to win the Stanley Cup, playing that speed, some have called it touch-and-go style, where, chip up the boards, a lob into the neutral zone, and then off we go to the races. Mm. That's sort of the way the Penguins played. That's the way they won the Stanley Cup. You guys might know better than I would.
Yeah.
Oof. Being Sharks fans.
As I take another gulp of my beer.
Yes. But that being said, I think that you made the point about Jimmy Vesey has been a huge contributor. I would say that Jimmy Vesey's arrival in the offseason actually maybe partly spurred this approach, because it's we picked up Vesey, we picked up Brandon Peary, picked up Buchnevich is coming over from Russia. We have skill guys coming in. Why don't we just, I don't know, play a skilled game. And that would work.
Don't forget Gang Zibanejad.
Yeah, and Mika Zibanejad. Yes, that's another really good point. They, a trade that we talked about on this podcast over the summer, they shipped off Derek Brassard, who was a guy that, I think is a quality playmaker, second liner. I think a decent player.
Yeah.
But they shipped him off to Ottawa for Mika Zibanejad, who's an up-and-coming guy, still in his early 20s. I would say a lot faster. I would say the better player.
Yeah.
And I think we were saying that before the season started, and you look at the way the Ottawa Senators have fared, not good. And you look at the way the Rangers are torching the league, I would say that this trade really worked out for them.
Yeah, and they can really play a track meet style. They get up and down the ice, and it's not surprising when you see, the names Kreider and Grabner and Rick Nash is resurgent right now. This is just a really very complete forward group.
Yeah, I was listening to a podcast that I shall not name, but they were saying, oh yeah, this is the year Rick Nash decided to be good, because that's what he does. He takes years off. I'm like, that is such a shallow way to look at the situation. They're playing a system that works to, forwards who have skills. It works to their strengths. And so to just reduce it to, oh, like, he just decided to be good this year. Like, that's really missing the point.
Yeah, and I know that when people say stuff like that, it's usually meant sarcastically, but it's kind of a... Well, it's really taking a lot of credit away from Rick Nash, saying that he decided to play well.
Well, my issue with it is that it dumbs down the whole analysis. It's like, if I'm someone listening to that podcast and I'm thinking, oh, I want to understand why the Rangers are good, or like, I want to just know what's going on. And then someone tells me, Rick Nash has just decided to be good. It's like, oh, so Rick Nash is like a moody weirdo or something.
And, like, you know, if you look at the Rangers lineup and you look how deep they are, don't underestimate or don't overlook the fact that, you know, having people around you to that can put the puck in the net, it alleviates a lot of pressure off of, you know, off of a player. And, you know, if that pressure is constantly on someone, because, you know, Rick Nash is a 40 goal scorer, and, you know, people sort of expect that from him every year. Even if he doesn't do that, the team around him is making up the difference.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, if he
doesn't have to be the centerpiece.
He can afford to not be great, and, you know, through that, with the lack of pressure, will be better. It's weird, but, you know, it's a thing that happens.
They're all opening up space for each other on the ice.
Yeah.
And that's the whole idea, is that if you constantly have guys out on the ice who can put pressure in the opposing team on any given shift, at the end of the day, you probably win that equation, you know?
Mm.
It totally gets them away from that style they were playing last season of just, you know, conservative, chip it out, don't really play that sort of concerted offensive style. They still don't have a very good blue line. Like, that hasn't gone away.
Yeah, you still see the kind of goals. Like, when you see, like, you know, Girardi and
Dan Girardi
Stahl out there, you still see the same kind of goals being scored against them.
Yeah.
It's just with the offensive speed, it's not in their end as much.
But the thing is, you factor in that speed, you factor in the sort of this system, this lightning in the bottle that they found, and then you add in Henrik Lundqvist, who's one of the best goalies we've ever seen. Does that, like, I guess that's where this conversation sort of goes to, is where, like, what's the ceiling for this team? Is there a ceiling? Are they headed, are they a lock for the conference finals? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I don't know if they're a lock for the conference finals, but because, like, they're playing great, but it's November, so I don't know. If they keep playing this way, then they can, then they're definitely, I would feel very comfortable saying that they can make the conference finals. But
I mean, in, you know, the new form, the new playoff format, they could very well get Pittsburgh in the first round.
Yeah.
And one of those teams is going to be out.
That would be a really fun series now.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And, you know,
last year it was horrible.
The third year in a row, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So I mean, lock for a like saying a team is a lock for the conference final unless there's no one else in the division doesn't really say much, because, yeah, unless you get a wild card in the first matchup, then it's out the window.
Yeah, because weird things happen in the playoffs, especially in the first round. And then, like Joe was saying, with the way things are aligned right now, there's always a great team that's out in the first round. Like, we've seen Chicago and St. Louis go head-to-head in the first round, and it's like, oh my God, I can't believe one of these teams is going to be out after only one round. But that's just kind of the way it goes.
But, I mean, to play devil's advocate here, if the Rangers and the Penguins play a seven-game series right now, like, who wins that series? Like, are we sure that I mean, I know Pittsburgh are the reigning champs, and I know that they're potentially the best team in the league right now. But the way the Rangers play, the way they're four lines deep, the way they have, you know, the king in net, Henrik Lundqvist, couldn't they just go, like, toe-to-toe with the Penguins and maybe come out on top?
They absolutely could. Like, I would love to see...
That would be a fun series.
...that conference final, and especially a seven-game series. You know, just watch them beat each other up. But, yeah, you know, like, if you look at both lineups, you know pretty much all the names on both lineups. And, you know, I think the Penguins have a little bit of a more... They have a greater weakness in net than the Rangers, but the Rangers have a greater weakness on defense than the Penguins do.
Yeah.
So it sort of evens out.
Yeah.
And the speed is almost equal. I pretty much, you know, the talking heads on NBC are going to say, yeah, but one team has Sidney Crosby and the other doesn't.
Oh.
You know,
yeah.
So obviously, you know, you have Crosby, Malkin, Kessel.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, another thing you'll hear a lot is, you know, they're the reigning Stanley Cup champs. So, you know, it's another irrelevant point to say a team is good, you know, year to year. But I do think that the edge would go to Pittsburgh. But the Rangers could definitely hold their own this year. I'd be very surprised if in a playoff series between those two teams, if you know, the Rangers only managed one win.
Yeah, and that's a good point. And I will say this, though. I think that we shouldn't, like, don't discount the Lundqvist factor, because he's never had this kind of team playing in front of him. Like, in all his career, maybe I'm not thinking back far enough, but I've been watching hockey as long as Henrik Lundqvist has been playing in the NHL, and I don't really remember a team, maybe outside of the 05-06 Rangers, where Jaromir Jagr had 123 points, that really sort of matched up to this level of offense. It would be really fun. And, like, you know, obviously the Rangers are four lines deep. We all know this, but then again, the Penguins could only roll out three lines and maybe win win more than half their games in regular season. Like,
yeah,
when you have Phil Kessel, Evgeny Malkin, and Sidney Crosby on three different lines, do you even really need a fourth line? You know?
Yeah.
It's so in a seven game series, that would be really interesting what the Rangers would do to, you know, sort of manage those guys. But at the same time, all of a sudden, when you have that speed going against you and you're the Penguins, now you have to react. It's no longer just you're the attacker the entire time. That's what we saw in the playoffs last year when Pittsburgh and New York had that showdown in the first round. Pittsburgh was on the offense pretty much the entire time. Now they're actually going to have to, like,
structure.
They're actually going to have to think about, wait, these guys can act, like, if we turn it over at the offensive blue line, or we make a bad pass in the offensive zone, it could potentially be a goal.
That would be so interesting to see, because they're both such fast teams that can play a track meet style. Would they pretty much offset each other?
Yeah,
and it would just become like a defensive battle.
And would you see basically two teams playing how, you know, the Penguins played last year, where it's just back and forth up the ice? Or would you see reigning Stanley Cup champs have to adjust and maybe slow their game down to manage the speed of the Rangers and to counteract, what the Rangers are going to throw at them?
Yeah, basically like gum up the play.
Yeah.
Just like sort of stifle that offense.
Yeah, like, so like would it continue to be, you know, a game all about speed, or would it turn into just a faster paced neutral zone game?
Yeah.
I can see them saying, okay, we're going to really commit to clogging up the neutral zone, and then our speed is going to show up when we basically cause a turnover, and then we shorten the ice for ourselves because we're only going 100 feet from the neutral zone, and then that's where the transition speed comes in.
Yeah, so it would be really fascinating, because it would be probably some of the best hockey we've ever seen. One team that's definitely nowhere near showing us the best hockey we've ever seen, the New York Islanders.
Oh man,
sticking with the New York theme here. What?
Andy Ladd's on the fourth line right now.
Like, I mean,
and didn't he just score his first goal with them?
Yeah, like a few games ago.
We talked about the New York Islanders on the last pod, but since then it hasn't really gotten any better. Like Cal Clutterbuck, for those who don't know, Cal Clutterbuck, a career fourth liner, best known for like hitting people after the play, is playing on the first line with John Tavares, who's like one of the seven best players in the NHL. So that's not good. And Jack Capuano has said publicly that what's he supposed to do when they basically lose like Okposo and Nielsen? What do you guys make of that?
I mean, they weren't supposed to, like, getting Andrew Ladd wasn't supposed to be losing Okposo. Like, obviously, they weren't traded straight up for each other. You know, Okposo signed in Buffalo.
But isn't Ladd clearly the worst player of the two?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's not...
Like, all things considered?
Yeah, like, you know, but he's not, like, incompetent compared to Okposo.
No, he's not bad. The whole point of this, to me, because there's been a lot of talk about the Islanders, and, like, look, rightfully so, because they were a team who we, I think, all hoped was going to take that next step and, like, really rekindle those dynasty years of the 80s, or at least give us something, a fun product to enjoy. And it's just a shame to see the collection of talent that they have go to waste. You know, like the Nick Lettys, Yaroslav Halak is a great goaltender. John Tavares is one of the best, like one of the very best players in the NHL. So to see that go to waste because they just can't seemingly get a a roster together, it's just kind of sad.
There's a lot of weirdness going on in Brooklyn right now because
in Brooklyn,
because you know with the three goaltender situation, they don't have their goaltender sorted out.
Oh yeah, and that's the other thing that's funny is that like they're so afraid of sending down JF Berube to the minors because they think he'll get claimed on waivers. Like the guy hasn't done that much.
Well, from what I can glean, it sounds like they're not afraid of losing him because they think he's great. They're afraid of losing him because they seem pretty confident that one of Greiss or Halak is going to get injured and they're going to need a competent backup.
It's just weird. Like the whole, like, I guess, because my whole thing with this team is none of this really makes sense. Like nothing they've done in the last like 2 years to me makes like any sense. Like the arena, it's a like they play in the Barclays Center, home of the Brooklyn Nets. It's not a hockey arena or even close. The ice is like notoriously bad. They have like issues with the pipes so that it can't reach that perfect temperature, so that it's cold enough to stay, like that perfect like hardness. So the ice is bad. They can't really put together a decent roster. Fans aren't showing up to the games. Like, what is going on with this franchise? Like, I think it's so fascinating.
I think the goaltender situation is sort of analogous to the whole thing. And like, they're just sort of mismanaged.
Yeah, and so, but then who gets the blame? Like people are pinning the blame on Jack Capuano, the head coach, and maybe rightfully so. I mean, like, he clearly hasn't gotten them all the way yet, but they did win a playoff round last year. They beat a good Florida Panthers team. So, like, I don't know. But he's also making these, like, idiot decisions, putting like Jason Chimera and Cal Clutterbuck next to John freaking Tavares.
If they want to have someone that's not a fourth liner playing on the first line, couldn't they like maybe trade one of their starting goalies, of which they have two?
Yeah, it's like
to get a top six forward.
That's a position of strength for them. Why not, ship one off and like help yourself out here?
Especially if they're so high on Berube.
I don't know. Like, I just wanted to touch on the Islanders because it's like everyone's talking about it, and I don't know. I like bashing dumb teams.
I mean, we thought that, like, once Hamonic like decided to stay, we thought, okay, like they're solid, they're in place.
Yeah, and like their roster isn't like the worst in the world. No, it's just like they've like systematically eroded the depth of this roster, and well, not even really the depth, like the high end skill. Okposo and Nielsen, like those aren't just any like random players. They're like good players.
Losing Nielsen to Detroit was sort of a big blow because he was a stabilizing role in down the middle, and if you're missing one piece down the middle, it's almost a whole line that is rendered somewhat ineffective.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, anyway, I don't want to spend this whole podcast bashing the Islanders because I don't know. Like it's not the best, but another like let's talk about our home teams a little bit, if you will. San Jose Sharks off to an interesting start. I'll call it interesting. I don't know what Sharks fans would call it.
Interesting. It's a weird start.
They're one of the best teams in the league in terms of generating scoring chances, generating shot attempts, generating offense as a whole, and yet they find themselves as one of the worst goal scoring teams in the entire league. I'm going to ask you guys this question because I don't really watch every Sharks game. Is this something that is perhaps something to be worried about long term, or is this just one of those things where the puck isn't going in, and but it's eventually going to go in because they just get more chances than the other team night in and night out?
It's definitely the latter. Like it's not they suddenly forgot how to score. It's maybe a little bit of preseason rust. I realize we're 14.
I mean, a lot of those guys had short summers too.
Yeah, so. Yeah, they're still looking for the stride because there are some differences in the lineup, because everything like the lines that they had last season, they worked so well together, and with the addition of Donskoy and maybe eventually Timo Meier, you have some changes, some shakeups,
and then Botker as well,
and the integration of Schlemko.
Oh, did I say Donskoy?
Yeah,
I meant Botker.
Yeah. Well, so what is it? Like, is there anything in their game you know, visually that's maybe leading you to think that there's a reason for this, or is it really just one of those bad stretches?
I think it's just a bad stretch. I mean, they've been sloppy at times throughout the season.
Yeah.
And the effort has been a little inconsistent. Like, there was a game maybe a couple weeks ago where they dominated the first period, I think against Arizona, and then came out and laid an egg the rest of the game. And then the reverse happened the other day where the Sharks were pretty much non-existent in the first period and then woke up and won the game, really kind of dominated the rest of the way. So it's kind of inconsistent effort. Some games passing is way better than others.
And you say the same about Jones so far this season. He hasn't looked
He has not been great. Like, not terrible, but just not like his usual self.
Yeah.
So, you know, you combine bad shooting percentage with so-so goaltending, and this is kind of what happens.
I mean, nothing looks bad. Like, if there was a problem, they would look bad. And, you know, they just sort of look a little lackluster, or, you know, not getting the bounces. So, you know, things will straighten out, and, you know, they will find their stride, and they will, you know, start to put up the points.
And they're experimenting with lines a little bit. Like, they moved Tomas Hertl from first line left wing to third line center.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. DeBoer wants to see what, you know, some of his players can do.
I mean, now's the time to do it.
Yeah.
But one point that I've seen being brought up in the Sharks sort of like Twitter sphere, well, not really by a lot of people, mainly by one person, but
I know where this is going.
What's up with Paul Martin? Like, why are people suddenly bashing Paul Martin? Like, I thought that he was like the antidote to Brent Burns, and that like he was the yin to Burns' yang, and that like he was the guy that was that stabilizing force. Like, why all of a sudden are like ardent Shark supporters like sort of, you know, denigrating Paul Martin? Like, what's up with that?
I mean, that's just sort of what Sharks fans do. Like,
tell me, I want to know specifically, you've watched all the games, is there anything that he's done or hasn't done that would lead you to believe, okay, people are bashing him because of this? Like, or is this bashing legitimate?
No, there's been nothing. Like, it's just, you know, they notice him out on the ice for one goal or against or something like that, and then...
And it's his fault.
Yeah, yeah.
Naturally, it has to be his fault.
Yeah, I mean, like, the goal that Jaromir Jagr scored yesterday when he was up against Martin and Jagr just slammed on the brakes like only he can do at the age of 70. But any defenseman would have had their hands full with him.
That's not exclusive to Paul Martin.
Yeah, the thing with Paul Martin is he's not flashy. You don't notice him a whole lot. It's a lot like Marc-Edouard Vlasic, where he just doesn't make bad pinches very often. He doesn't turn the puck over a whole lot, so when he makes one mistake, it's like, oh my god, he's 34 and the sky is falling on him. Like,
you take all the bad plays that never happened for granted.
Exactly.
One thing that I found interesting is I was talking to a coworker of mine today, and he was saying, yeah, I really want to go see that when the Panthers come visit San Jose, because it would be, if Luongo was in net, you would have the first, second, and third overall picks of, I think, the 1997?
That's close. Ole Jokinen was the third pick.
Oh, okay. So he was wrong then.
He was wrong.
I was lied. So what pick was Luongo?
I don't remember, but he was in that draft.
Okay. Well, Luongo was like one of the top picks for the New York Islanders at the time.
Mike Milbury.
And then Ole Jokinen, a former Panther. So shout out.
Really so close. Full circle.
Full circle.
Yeah. But I think... Just to weigh in a little here, since you guys are the reigning experts, I think that, look, I don't really watch all the Sharks games. I've said that before, but I look at the numbers, right? Like, I'm looking at the facts here, and they're generating chances and shots better than pretty much almost anyone. So if they're not scoring, to me, it seems like it's only natural that they're going to regress back to the mean and like start scoring goals again.
Yeah.
Like, like, hockey stats aren't very complicated.
Yeah, like, there's going to be a stretch where...
They're going to score, like, 5, 6,
yeah,
4.
They just win every game by 3 goals. You know, yeah.
So, Sharks fans, if any Sharks fans are listening, like, and you might be a little down in your team right now and making up narratives like Paul Martin sucks, it's going to be okay.
Yeah. Not only should you take your finger off the panic button, you should, like, throw it in the garbage. Like,
well... A player that I want to throw in the garbage is Kevin Bieksa.
Segues.
Because let's head a little south to the Anaheim Ducks. A quick overview of the Ducks, since we happen to talk about this team a lot on this show. The Ducks, I just before this pod, I did a another episode of the SB Nation Anaheim Calling podcast, which everyone should listen
to. Everyone should listen to that.
Everyone should listen to. Anyway, shameless plug aside, like, the Ducks, everyone expected them, well, everyone, a lot of people expected them to be terrible because of the arrival of Randy Carlyle, and I actually think it's been the opposite. Like, they've been, just been, like, really, really average. They're not great defensively. They're not very good offensively, but they're not really terrible either way.
Their record reflects this. They're 7-5-3. They're like the okayest team in the league.
And if you like, you know, forget what the loser point is all about, they're 7-8 basically.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, they're just average. And it makes sense. They have one really good line, Richie, Getzlaff, and Perry, and then they kind of have everyone else. Now that Raquel is back, that certainly helps their depth, but they don't really have any speed or at least any, like, real scoring punch outside of that top, those top four forwards. And then, you know, everyone keeps saying, oh, look at how productive the Kessler line has been. I'm like, yeah, because they play, like, freaking half the game. Like, they're going to score, you know? So, I don't know. I still think this Ducks, I mean, look, Hampus Lindholm is back. I think he looks great. But I don't know. Like, I think this Ducks team isn't really headed to anywhere exciting in the near future.
Yeah, because their speed comes from Cogliano and then, like, their defenseman.
Right? Yeah.
That's...
Well, and that's one point that I was trying to make earlier in the week on Twitter is, like, I would be very curious to see if you took out Randy Carlyle from this equation and you put in a coach, like, just maybe a more progressive-minded coach, and you try to instill into this team more of, like, that New York Rangers, Pittsburgh Penguins mindset and let these defensemen skate and let, you know, these forwards just kind of run around. I wonder what it would look like, because I know they don't have a ton of speed or skill outside of the top two lines, but if you just kind of let them attack instead of playing this weird conservative style, I wonder what it would look like.
And isn't that more of Ottawa's game?
What?
I might just be thinking of solely of Erik Karlsson, but, you know, like, you know, skating the puck up the ice.
Yeah.
You know, and then just sort of...
But they have the defensemen. Like, Cam Fowler is very good at that. Yeah, Hampus Lindholm is good at that. Sammy, like, they have defensemen who can really lead the rush from the back end.
Yeah.
So, like, that would be interesting to me.
Yeah. And then, because I think the first thing that some people might think of is, well, yeah, you can try and play fast, but Ryan Getzlaff ain't fast. But if the defensemen are the ones, like, generating the speed,
yeah,
then you just let Getzlaff go to work in the offensive zone.
Yeah, like, quick outs, you know, just, like, get the puck in the defensive zone, look up, make that quick short pass, make another pass out of the zone, and then boom, you're going down the neutral zone, you know, like, you're going downhill. So, I don't know. I'm not, like, maybe that wouldn't work, but it would just be interesting, because I think what they're doing right now isn't really, like, doing anything for them.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, and going back to the Bieksa thing, like, he's actually playing awfully.
Yeah.
Like, he...
Eye test and analytics, like... like it's bad.
Yeah, like I posted a little clip on Twitter the other day where he gets the puck in his own zone, completely ignores a guy who's wide open, then rims it up the wall to a guy who's covered.
Yeah, into pressure.
Then gets the puck back, has a couple options, and just dumps it into the middle of the ice to no one.
Or actually, more specifically, right to the other team.
To the other team, yeah. And like... You know, Randy Carlyle, for whatever reason, loves Kevin Bieksa, and I'm, like, not sure why.
So, he's getting this ice time in favor of...
Like literally anyone else who's, like, useful.
Like, are Theodore or Manson playing?
Well,
or...
Theodore's in the AHL. Manson is, like that's the thing. Bieksa's playing almost more than anyone else on the blue line, which is, like, insane. Like, as a hockey coach... Shouldn't you be able to realize, like, this guy isn't good? Like, I don't know.
I can't explain it. I mean, if you're rational thinking, you would, even if you really respect him as a veteran and a guy that's been good in the league for a long time, you have to at some point say, maybe we should put a better player out there.
Yeah.
This isn't working.
But yeah.
I don't know.
Anyway, the Ducks are depressing. That's fine. It's been a fun year so far in the NHL. We got exciting rookies, Patrick Laine, Austin Matthews, Connor McDavid, second-year player. You know, there's been a lot of must-watch, like must-see TV just because of these guys. So
must-see TV that's not on TV.
Yeah, exactly. NBCSN. We actually, just before this pod, we watched Washington-Chicago, a game that wasn't nationally televised, which is kind of weird considering those teams, but it was a really good game. Caps take it in overtime, just like I predicted.
You called it.
I even called Taves winning the opening faceoff. That's what I feel the most proud about.
Vegas.
But anyway, you guys got anything else?
I just can't get over the fact that Patrick Laine is, like, sniping from downtown.
He's leading the league in goals.
Yeah. And like, sniping from long range.
And he's, like, killing goalies. And I saw someone make this point on Twitter the other day, and I think it's super true. Like, once he figures out how to get the easy goals, like the cheap ones, he's going to score, like, 60.
Yeah.
I'm glad we're recording this, so when it happens, I'll be like, ha, told you so.
Yeah, we called it. Yeah, it happened.
Yeah, he and Tarasenko might have the best shots in the league right now.
Yeah, it's like, it's basically take your pick between Tarasenko, Ovechkin, and then Laine. And I don't know who, I mean, I'd throw Pacioretty in there maybe as like a fourth or a fifth.
Maybe.
Phil Kessel. I mean, Phil Kessel's got a like wicked wrister.
Sagan has a great shot.
Sagan. I'm trying to think who else.
Even Jamie Benn has a great wrist shot.
Yeah, he's got like a heavy shot.
Yeah.
Like, because it's kind of like Laine where he doesn't really put much on it. Like, it doesn't look like he's doing much, and then the puck just like burns through the net.
He's kind of like the quarterback where it looks like he's just flicking his wrist, but he throws it like 60 or 70 yards or whatever.
I'm trying to think who else. This is like really bugging me now. I mean, Crosby is a pretty good shot.
Yeah, but it's more of like a sneaky quick
shot. Yeah, with him, it's all in the release.
He disguises when he's releasing it. That's where his strength lies in his wrist shot.
Well, I think Patrick Kane actually has a really good wrist shot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's also one of those underrated ones.
He really, like, loads up on it. Like, not to say that he's drawing it back a whole lot, but you can see, like, he's really cupping the puck
and
like, generating a lot of potential energy.
Yeah, I wouldn't throw Corey Perry in there because he scores all his goals within, like, 5 feet of the net.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, he's usually on his knees when he scores.
Yeah, like, he's a power forward. Yeah,
but he does other things that are so impressive, like his hands.
Well, his skating is really underrated.
It really is.
Like, he does this thing where he'll, like, skate backwards around the net.
Yes,
like,
I love it.
Like, he'll mohawk around the net. It's really weird. I've never seen anyone else do it.
Yeah.
But, like, teams don't know how to handle it.
Yeah, and the great thing about that is if he's coming around the right side and he mohawks, then he's coming out on his forehand.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's got such a great shot in tight.
Who's got the best shot on the Sharks?
Joe Pavelski has a really deadly accurate
shot. Like, the best shot, just, like, no one-timer.
I mean, Brent Burns.
Yeah,
Brent Burns.
Like, with no defense, just you and the goalie, who has the best chance of scoring?
I think it's Brent Burns.
Really? Yeah. Like, over any forward?
I mean, Pavelski's really close.
Yeah.
Like, if we're just talking about wrist shots from the slot, like, Pavelski's really good.
Yeah, because he's another one that really loads up on it, and it's just so accurate. Like, if you watch him in the shootout, the way he's able to pick low blocker, top corner, is uncanny.
Couture's got a sneakily pretty good shot,
too. He does.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, for the Ducks, I don't know. I don't know anymore. I mean, Getzlaff actually has a pretty good shot when it goes in.
Yeah, when he uses
when it goes in.
When it goes in,
That's sort of the finish of a pretty good shot.
No one else has
it's a prereq.
No one else really has, like, that great of a shot on the Ducks. I mean, for the Habs, I would say Galchenyuk. Oh, Pacioretty. God, why did I even, yeah.
Why even?
Pacioretty, who, like secretly can't, like, score this season.
He's off to a really slow start,
yeah, but
he?
he always does that.
Can you explain it?
I
he's still shooting more than, like, anyone else.
I think if you want Pacioretty to start scoring based on last year and this year, fire Michel Therrien.
Yeah.
Like, I think the weight of just having him looming over him.
I guess we're going to talk about the Habs.
And putting him on the third line.
Oh, it's happening.
Quick Habs recap.
Just let it happen.
Carey Price is a god, and they're playing well enough to, like, win with God on their team.
Yeah. I mean, Carey Price, theoretically could win any game, and he has a higher probability of doing that than any other goalie in the league.
Yeah.
But, like, the Habs have really good top two lines.
Oh, yeah. Like, they're a good team. I don't want to, like, sell that short, but, like, he's playing out of his mind right now.
Do you want to commiserate about, a week ago or so when the Sharks and Habs lost a combined 15-0 on the same day?
Yeah, I've erased that from memory. So, moving on.
Man, that was... Who did they play against?
They lost 10-0 to Columbus.
Columbus.
It's funny because that night I had a coworker, the same one who didn't know where Roberto Luongo's draft was, like, hey, what time is it? 10 past Montoya.
That one's old.
Yeah,
it's
terrible.
Did they leave Montoya in for that whole thing?
The whole time, and that was a big controversy.
That's brutal.
I think it's fine. It's a back-to-back. Carey Price, I don't want him to get hurt.
That's true.
And they weren't going to win anyway.
Yeah.
That will earn Al Montoya the moniker of good teammate.
Yeah. He's the Brian Boucher.
You're the man. We respect you.
All right, boys. We good pod here.
Good podcast.
We had no idea we were going to talk about before this podcast. And I feel like we gave the people something to chew on for like a few days.
Yeah, it was respectable.
Yeah.
That's kind of all you can ask for.
Oh, right? Like on a very side note, on the 22nd.
Of November?
Yeah. Oh, is it Habs Sharks?
No. Vegas is unveiling what their team name and logo is going to be.
Ooh, yes, that's the day before my birthday.
Happy birthday!
Yes!
That's going to be your gift from the NHL to
I'm
you.
I'm so stoked about that. Oh, man. That's like really cool. That's like next week.
Yeah, so we can see what combination of color and night they're going to use.
Yeah, essentially. All right, Nick.
All right.
Lead us out.
All right, we're going to go enjoy our Friday night. Guys, thank you for listening to another episode of the Garage Hockey Podcast. If you want to hear more, we are on iTunes and Stitcher. If you want to submit listener questions, you can submit that on Twitter at Garage Hockey Pod. We also appreciate a 5-star rating and review because it helps people...
On iTunes.
On iTunes. 5-star rating and review on iTunes. It will help people notice the show. Guys, thank you for listening. We'll talk to you soon.